Good morning, everybody. Nice smiles this morning. Isn't it nice and warm in church today? Oh, thank goodness. I'd like to speak to you this morning about vulnerability, about making a space for vulnerability in three different places. Firstly, Jesus made a space for vulnerable people. We need to make a space to discover our own vulnerability. And we also need to learn how to speak about Jesus in a more vulnerable way. Okay, so those are the three things I'd like to talk to you about. But for now, can you imagine I've got a calculator? Because I don't have one and I should, right? I had one in Kirknewton and I borrowed one, but I don't have one now. Have you ever tried to divide any number on a calculator by zero? Anyone? Oh no, that'll just be me then. Okay, well my wee boy Innes actually is really interested in calculators, very fascinated by them. He loves numbers, he's a very logical person. And he was sitting at dinner the other night with Chris and I and Rory and he was like, Mum, what's 10 divided by 0? I don't know. Rory, stop snorting your spaghetti. And I'm like, hold on a minute, let me think. If I had 10 sweeties that were divided by 0, if I didn't need to share them, well, I'd still have 10. 10? No, Mum. No. Oh, look at this calculator. Wonderful. Okay, so I say to Innes, well, if I had 10 sweets and I didn't need to share them with anyone, then surely I would still have 10. So it's 10. No, 10 divided by 1 is 10. But 10 divided by 0, Mum, is actually impossible. I look at my beautiful firstborn child and I say, really, darling? In my head thinking, no, you're still wrong. Chris intercepts the conversation. I think Innes might be right. And I look at my beautiful husband. And inside I'm thinking, are you going to make fool of me in front of the kids again? So he goes into the study, he retrieves the calculator, types in 10 divided by 0, error. Okay, so if you can go home and try it out, you get an error code. Do you mind if I keep this here at the minute? Right, I don't want to run your battery out. So math is logical. 1 plus 1 is? Well done, you wait, okay. 10, as I've discovered, divided by 0 is error. Okay. Now, when I look at the Beatitudes, I kind of get this massive error code in my brain. Imagine you're encountering these statements for the first time. That's really hard, because we've read them quite a lot, isn't it? But just imagine, right? What? In order to laugh, I've got to start crying. In order to be joyful, I've got to have people that exclude me, make fun of me. I've got to be persecuted to be happy. To be blessed, I've got to be starving. To be blessed, I've got to be poor. Well, hang on a minute, God. This is just not making any sense to me. It's not logical. And to be honest, I'm not sure I really want to have a part of this blessing, this so-called heavenly blessing. Do you ever think like that when you read them? Do you? Oh, good. Some nods. Well, I certainly do. But as usual, when we encounter a biblical text, we've got to ask ourselves, what kind of writing is this? Is it a letter? No. Poem? No. Law? No. Historical fact? Maybe. It's actually the notes that Luke wrote about a sermon that Jesus gave. And it's not the whole sermon. It's just the opening remarks, right? Next to the notes on the sermon, he writes, there's a crowd, and in the crowd, there's a huge mix of people. There's people from different cultures, people from different religions probably, different social backgrounds. And the technical name for this, one of my favorite biblical writers, teachers, says, is mishmash. Jesus was speaking to a holy mishmash. So just keep that in mind. The Beatitudes often get misunderstood as some sort of philosophical, spiritual calculator in how I can be blessed by God. But Jesus wasn't doing that. He was firstly announcing something. He was drawing a crowd. He was making a space so that the mishmash all knew he was talking to each one of them. He was actually announcing the type of people he wanted to talk to. He wanted to talk to hungry, grieving, poor, persecuted people. These were the people that you could see right in front of him. He had a real audience, and they had real problems. So if you've ever misunderstood the Beatitudes and had that big error code, don't be confused anymore. The Beatitudes are firstly an announcement that or an advert that Jesus was wanting to speak to needy people. Have you ever been to the Edinburgh Festival? And on the street performers, what they're doing, they're calling out their crowd. Hey, you in the red jacket. Hey, you in the whatever with the funny hair. Jesus was employing that kind of crowd drawing tool. He was drawing people in need towards him. He was showing the kind of spaces he wanted to move amongst. Now, it would be really daft if you were to read the Beatitudes today and think, I'm going to take a vow of poverty in order to be blessed. Or I'm going to pursue weeping as a project in order to be blessed. Or I'll try and drum up some sort of social enemies in order to be blessed. Or I'll starve myself in order to be blessed. That would be like trying to take on the problems of the people back then. We don't need to. Here in this crowd, we've got our own problems, and Jesus wants to meet us in those. Some of them might be the same. Some of them might be significantly different. Now, most of the things that Jesus was addressing back then, those needs that he was speaking out in the crowd, would have been problems that people would have associated with not being blessed by God. You know, the people at the time would have saw these as outward signs that these people were definitely not blessed by God. No way. But Jesus was trying to turn that on its head. And he was saying, if you've got any problem that you think is going to be a barrier between you and me, you are the very person I want to speak to. I want to speak to needy, vulnerable people. I want to be friends with those kind of people. Quite often we all carry around inside ourselves, just imagine a space inside ourselves, something maybe that you think, if that wasn't there, God would love me more, I'd be more blessed. Or if I could just have that thing, and then I might be more blessed. We get some sort of spiritual mathematics, let's call it, and we think, if I just add that into my life, a better prayer life, if I could just believe more, if I could just not do that thing I always do, or if I could do that thing I always said that I would, then I would be blessed by God. It's like we've made up some sort of sum. Me plus that thing equals blessed. But if we encounter the Beatitudes as firstly an announcement that God wants to bless needy people, well, we've got to confess we're wrong. We can't earn God's favour. We just can't earn it. We just can't. Now, if you're like me and you want to devise some sort of logical pattern from the Beatitudes, we could extract that God is attracted to lack. It seems to be lack that draws him more than anything else, more than anything that we think we might have. Now, some people do take that to the opposite extreme, and I've met some, and they think, if I could starve myself, pursue poverty, find some sort of enemies, find some people that are against me, then I can say I'm blessed by God. But we've got to confess, that too is ridiculous, isn't it? That's like saying, me, take away something, equals blessed. Why has it always got to be me add something equals blessed, or me take away something, then I would be blessed? Why can't it be me plus nothing, me take away nothing equals blessed? That's why it's good news. Me as I am blessed, you as you are blessed. That's why the gospel is such good news. Now I'm going to go off script a wee bit here, right? I was just thinking about a day. I need some water. Is that okay? A day I found Innes crying in the house, and I'm like, oh, what's he crying for? And he was in his bedroom and he was counting his money. And I was like, what's wrong? And he said, I just don't have anything. I just don't have enough. And I just was like, it's one of these parent moments. You're just like, oh crap, what do I do? Sorry, God. But seriously, what do I do? I don't know how to make him feel better, because actually I don't want him to love money. What does he want here? And some reason I've remembered the story of the prodigal son. And I remembered the words that the dad said to the second son. Hey, do you remember the words? And I thought, I know what I need to do. So I went down the stairs And I got the family piggy bank and I opened it and I tipped it all out onto his bed. And then I just started to put all the money in his bank, right? And I was like, you're always with me and everything I have is yours. And I started to cry and he started to cry and I was like, oh my goodness, whoa, this means something. Everything God has is already ours, right? We might look at our piggy bank of what we've got, what we are, and just see lack. But God just looks at us and he's like, hey, hang a minute. You're always with me. I made you. Everything I have is already yours. You're already blessed. You, as you are, blessed. Everyone out there, not in here, already blessed. That is why it's good news. Now, let's be honest with ourselves here. We don't need to pursue any new kind of lack, do we? We're already lacking in many things. We don't need to go after outward poverty to show the religious world that we're blessed. We're born in a human body and we need things all the time. Right now, me, I'm needing a drink, probably need to go to the toilet. You are probably needing something, right? It doesn't matter what that need looks like to God, whether it's enough money to just make that mortgage payment, that credit card payment, whether it's a child that's an adult child that you've got that's struggling with something and you just don't know what to do, whether you need comfort from God, whether you need reassurance because you just doubt so much. It doesn't matter. Just add your need to the list. We need to learn to allow God, we need to allow ourselves to show our needs to God and not be frightened of them. I've met a few people in my life that claim to have it all sorted. Have you? You met those people? Are those people nice to hang out with? No, really. Let's be honest. It's just hard to connect with. They don't seem to match the sort of complexity to what it is to be a human person. Where one minute I'm content, I'm happy. Next hour, I'm stumbling into some sort of need, some sort of anxiety, some sort of worry going on inside me. And I've met people, and it's beautiful when you see a person that knows they're needy, knows they're not sorted, but is completely comfortable with that. These are the kind of people I want to hang out with. These are the kind of people that in history, it seems, are much more likely to be able to come alongside somebody who's in need because they know that they need too. They can say that amazing sermon to the other person, me too. Now, have you ever heard of Brené Brown? There was a quote this week on the church Facebook page, or was it last week, from Brené Brown. She's a writer and a researcher who researches shame and vulnerability. Did you know those things were researchable? Well, they are, right? Now, I kind of like to think about vulnerability as a need that we articulate to another. Maybe it's maskless living. Maybe it's been able to show a little bit more of your insides to the outside than you would normally. And she writes this about vulnerability. It's the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, creativity. It's a source of hope, empathy, accountability, authenticity. If you want greater clarity, I want that, or a deeper and more meaningful spiritual life, vulnerability is the path. Jesus knew what he was talking about, by the way. Just in case you doubted that. Now, in Luke 6, Jesus is contrasting two groups of people. The first group, in verses 20 to 23, recognize their own vulnerability. The second group think they've got it all sorted. And Jesus was saying, trying to express some sort of deep spiritual truth almost, even as he was shouting out to the crowd. If you're needy, you're going to know God present with you. If you're vulnerable and admit it, you'll know God's presence. But if you can't look at it, if you deny that reality, you're going to preach a false reality. I'd like to suggest that we need to get to grips with that truth personally in order to make real human connections. Now, you know and I know that the best friends we have, we can share our worst moments with. Just think of that person in your head. You can just share with them. And it applies to our relationship with God as well. If we learn how to be more vulnerable with God, we can feel his love and connection more with us. We don't have to hide from him. I had quite a weird experience a couple of weeks ago. I actually probably told a couple of you about it because I was like, oh, it was horrid. I woke up one morning and I just had such a fear of my own death. It was like the weight of death had just kind of landed on my chest, and it wasn't dying, it wasn't the act of dying. Fine with that, seem to be fine with that, I don't know. It's the what that will look like afterwards. And I kind of know what I believe, I know what I'm meant to believe, but there's a place inside me that doesn't really believe that. Are you like that? You know what you believe, but sometimes you didn't believe it. It's hard. And that week I was like, felt quite guilty. I'm meant to know what I believe. I'm meant to not be scared of what that's like after I die. But I was really scared. And I'm like, well, what do I do, God? Will I run away from that fear? Should I start preaching to myself? Should I deny that it's there? And I'm like, well, do you know what? I don't think God minds. If God loves me, I'm going to tell him. So I just told him in all the raw and unfiltered, ugh, I just don't believe today about that. I'm finding that hard. And I still felt a loving connection with God. Do you know that Jesus said, blessed are those who are poor in spirit? If you want to translate that into everyday language, I might as well have said, blessed are you who just can't believe enough today. I'm on your side. It's like a big me too. It's okay. God's on our side. If you get that, I hope you'll get the last bit of what I want to say. Almost finished, right? We need to learn how to talk about Jesus in more vulnerable ways with people that don't know him. And that can be quite scary. Now, we live in a culture where credibility is tested everywhere. In fact, I've seen up in Curtin, and you're probably sitting there right now working out if what I'm saying is actually true. I hope you are. That's what you should be doing, right? Shouldn't they? Then come and tell us afterwards if you disagree, right? So, people are naturally distrustful because there's so much fake news. There's, what else is there? There's like people that are salesmanship. You know when someone's trying to sell you something, don't you? You're working, is this true? Is what they're saying right? We're just naturally distrustful of what other people say, especially people in power. And that includes people with religious power. And as a reaction to this, I think we've got two choices in how we're going to speak about Jesus. Firstly, we could continue to speak about Jesus with a tone of certainty, like we know it all. Like, if you just give me a long enough penny, I'm going to tell you the meaning of life. Just listen to me. I'll give you all in Jesus. Imagine what Penny would think if she didn't believe in Jesus. She'd be like, oh, go away. We need to strike a new kind of tone. If we continue with this tone of certainty, we actually choose to side ourselves that Jesus said, we'll side ourselves with the people that Jesus said, whoa, to you that think you've got it all sorted. That's dishonest. It's false. We need to speak with a tone of vulnerability and admit we don't always know all the answers. Brené Brown has also written this. Faith is a place of mystery. It's mysterious. Where we find the courage to believe in what we cannot see and the strength, because it takes strength, to let go of the fear of uncertainty. In this culture, where everything is so uncertain and suspicious, a gospel that comes in so certain falls on deaf ears. If we talk with our friends, we must be willing to enter into doubt and mystery with them. Not in some sort of pretense or in some sort of sales tactic. Ugh, that'd be horrible. We must make sure that we're genuinely talking about things that we're searching about too. Like that other week when I was frightened of my own death. I had some great conversations with people that didn't believe in God about death, about what that would be like. And I got to share what I thought I should believe and what I did believe and what Jesus said. But at the same time, I got to share how I also felt. And there was an openness there because I wasn't trying to tell them what they should believe. And they talked about what they believed. And it was what I'm going to call a divine exchange. I bet you've all heard this quote before, right? But I'm going to change it. Have you ever heard that faith is like one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread? If you've listened to enough sermons, you'll have heard it. Right, a few wee nods, okay. But what if it wasn't like that? What if it was like two beggars looking for bread together? Do you see what I mean? It's like a power shift. Now, one can only do this if one can really admit that he or she just knows just a little bit and nothing certain. People who can do this, who can let go of all the religion and search deep mysteries of what is still unknown and what is not certain, create open spaces for people to explore what it means to be human, what it means to be alive. And I believe they're going to stumble into God. Because if God is true, we're always going to stumble into him. The church worldwide must be willing to lay down this addiction to certainty when they're speaking about God. I've made up a beatitude of my own. So these are not Jesus' words. Okay, these are mine. Sarah Finnegan. Blessed are those who move in conversations of uncertainty because they will meet open hearts and minds. But woe to people who cling to certainty because they're going to encounter deaf ears. The power's got to shift from me giving you the truth to us wondering together what the truth is. Here's a couple of quotes from Richard Rohr. He writes, "People who have had any genuine, real experience always know that they don't know." I know that's confusing, but they're utterly humbled before mystery. They are in awe of the abyss of it all, in wonder at eternity and the depth and the love, which is actually incomprehensible. It's incomprehensible to the human mind. No wonder we don't always understand. No wonder we struggle. And he also writes this, and I think this is probably one of my favourite things that he writes. Imagine a river. Faith does not need to push the river, because faith is able to trust that there is a river. The river is flowing, and we're in it. I hope that comforts you. So I'm just going to end by saying it how I like to say it. Faith means I, you, don't need to prove God in any conversation. If God is true, and I believe he is, then we get to stumble upon his truth over and over and over again. Amen.